David,
bam!
Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thanks.
Welcome to the Maps Canada podcast.
Yeah.
If you don't know, we're here at Psychedelic Science 2023, the biggest psychedelic conference ever in history. One of the title sponsors, I believe, is Dr. Bronner's, which David is the CEO, aka the Cosmic Engagement Officer of. You might recognize his last name from the brand Dr. Bronner's, the soaps. David is a board member of MAPS, as well as a longtime activist and leader in the psychedelic, hemp, and organic fair trade movements. And it kind of surprised me to be inspired by the story of a soap brand, but so be it.
Yeah, right on. Should I be talking about the story and origin? Is that the?
I'm curious, actually. So when first opened yesterday, or 2 days ago, when Rick gave the opening address, he mentioned that there are a few cultural inflection points around psychedelics sort of emerging in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. And I know that you've been very active on the regulatory front. And I'm curious for you if that's kind of still going to be a slog, or if there's been any signs of kind of exponential growth coming.
Yeah, I think both. It's definitely easier, but it's not going to happen by itself. And it is definitely going to be some hard work. I think we've been really lucky in Oregon and Colorado that we didn't have organized opposition or funded opposition, which definitely would have made it much more difficult. But that also points to just the amount of cultural momentum we have, that we didn't face any organized opposition. Mostly just the lack of education and awareness and the stigma, which we know we can win over so long as we have enough resources in a given campaign. We know if we can educate people, explain the healing benefits of these medicines, healing debilitating PTSD and depression, alcoholism, end-of-life anxiety, that we can get a strong majority of voters in a given state. The different access points into the culture, the medicines are coming in. So, of course, the MAPS project of bringing MDMA through FDA approval for PTSD and psilocybin, that's being USONA, Encompass, and others are doing. That's one route. And it's really important. It's generating the science and clinical data that's really shifting the culture. And will be available to those people who are suffering from treatment-resistant PTSD and depression, and hopefully will be covered by insurance because it kind of slots into the system we have. And so that's all great, but it's generally not available to the vast majority of the population who don't have those narrow qualifying diagnoses.
Yeah.
So that's where the state-regulated programs come in, and we're setting up in Oregon and Colorado where the state will license facilitators and growers to produce standardized amounts, first of psilocybin, then of other medicines that are administered in a controlled setting. And there's proper preparation and screening and orientation to the experience, and then the facilitated session and then integration. But all adults can access, not just those with qualifying conditions, so long as you're not contraindicated by schizophrenia or something. And that's really beautiful and awesome, but with those regulations comes a cost. And that's why it's also important to decriminalize. Well, first of all, to make the program as equitable as possible and have sliding scale fees and sponsorship programs. And Governor Paulus was just talking about putting a 10% tax on the medicine here to subsidize low-income individuals into the regulated program. And he's also fast-tracking Ibogaine, which is awesome.
Great.
Yeah. But then we need to decriminalize the medicines to allow for home growing, cultivation, sitting for each other, healing in community together, self-regulating communities and churches. And these are, the regulated access program is important for most of the population that's psychedelically naive, and they're not going to be comfortable accessing medicine in a decriminalized context.
Yeah.
I can't tell my mom, like, hey, here's a bag of mushrooms. She's not going to be comfortable. But having like a well-regulated access point that feels safe, and it's got the imprimatur of the state, that's going to be comfortable for people like my mom.
Right.
But it's really important to also allow for self-regulating churches and communities that, while initially are mostly going to be for people like us who are just already comfortable with that, that it's also over the long term, and also immediately, for many people, much more culturally and economically accessible to be able to have like a community in your own community, to be able to join and have that mutual support and camaraderie, you know, take medicine together, heal together, support each other. And arguably that's better for your long-term health than, you know, these kind of one and done, you know, therapy models.
Right.
And so I think they're complementary to have like, you know, the kind of therapeutic, the more regulated, but then having alongside it, the self-regulating communities. So as people become comfortable, they can join these communities, which, you know, and be able to access medicine more regularly at much lower cost, you know, within a community. And yeah, so really excited about what Colorado's done. I'm looking forward. I think Massachusetts might be in play in 24, Arizona.
Kentucky, do they have something in the works?
I don't know what kind of legislation they have, but we were all surprised by Kentucky allocating $42 million to Ibogaine research for opioid.
Yeah,
that came out of the blue as far as I knew.
Yeah.
It speaks to the power of the veteran advocates.
Right.
You know, the healing, I forget their name, which, you know, but one of the prominent
VA veteran groups. Or VETS, V-E-T-S.
Yeah, Veterans Exploring Treatment Solutions. That's Marcus and Amber Capone. I'm on the advisory board, former SEAL Team 6, working with Ibogaine and 5-MeO, and they're amazing. But this was another group, and it's Healing Breakthrough or something. I forget. But it was another vets group that was leading the charge in Kentucky.
Cool. Maybe I'll look it up after and put it on the screen.
Right on. Yeah, sorry.
It's all good.
Good Kentucky gentleman.
Yeah. I feel like the regulated aspect is really good too, since set and setting being the two pillars of what your particular experience is. When people come in trusting science, feeling safe about science, that safety really helps them. There's like a medical doctor there, there's someone in a nurse outfit, they're in a like clinical setting, they might really like that. Boomers would probably resonate with that more. And then there's the other side of the church, as you mentioned. Actually, on Sunday when I first came here, I accidentally walked into a psilocybin church service at this this cafe.
Plant Magic Cafe?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I didn't realize, it took a little bit to realize that it was actually like a church. And speaking with the organizer, she said that they applied for church status for protection, to be able to provide a safe space to the community where they don't have the threat of legal effects. So safety on both sides. It's really important to have both of those, 100%.
Yeah, right on. So. And in fact, I'm staying at the Plant Magic Cafe and big, you know, good friends with Meg, and she was a huge ally in the Prop 122 measure campaign here. It's a real good example of a responsible self-regulating church that's got good screening protocols. You know, they understand like who should and shouldn't sit with medicine and who's ready, good escalation protocol, good competent facilitation. And they're part of the Sacred Plant Alliance, which is a consortium of entheogenic churches sharing best practices and lawyers and, you know, understand, you know, setting themselves up in the best legal posture in case the feds, you know, try to interfere, which generally they have not, beyond seizing medicine. So like all these ayahuasca churches that are forming, some of them are getting their medicine seized at the border, but no one's been arrested, which kind of shows the progress. I mean, obviously we need to stop them from seizing medicine, but, you know, it's, even though obviously that needs to be solved, it's also a sign of how far we've come, that that's like pretty much the maximal threat. Unless you're like a dispensary, like, you know,
right.
And, you know, obviously if you're a sincere, legitimate church versus like you're just basically selling medicine. I would say at this point in the culture trajectory that if you're, form a good, sincere church with, you know, safe and sincere practice, that you're pretty much in the clear. And the Sacred Plant Alliance is a really good organization to check into.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Let's go. Very exciting. I've had to ask with the Santo Daime a few times. So I'm really glad. They're very sincere, very amazing people, very safe containers. So
I'm
glad that progress is happening in the U.S.
Yeah.
Awesome. So for people who don't know, Prop 122, Proposition 122 passed in Colorado in last November, which was called the Decriminalization, Regulated Distribution and Therapy Program for Certain Hallucinogenic Plants and Fungi Initiative. And so it's been a number of months since it passed. Have you seen any shifts as a result of that? or anything change in the larger climate?
I'm David Bronner, Cosmic Engagement Officer at Dr. Bronner's, board member of MAPS. Subscribe to MAPS Canada. Bam!
Well, I live in California, so I'm not on the ground here, but I would say that what I've observed while I'm here is incredible to have both Governor Paulus and the state Senate president, I forget his name, but both be on stage and speak very positively about psychedelic healing. And in fact, the state president, Senate president, shared that he was known as Mushroom Steve. So his first name's Steve. So he was known as Mushroom Steve back in college. And he says, yeah, I'm being termed out this year, so I'm going to talk freely.
There you go.
But yeah, some legislation we were worried about might interfere, especially with the decriminalized side of the equation, but ended up actually being pretty great. And yeah, the fact that, you know, the state leadership is like so enthusiastic about this, it just seems, it's really great. So that's on the regulated side. And then you just walked in on a psilocybin ceremony at Amanda Cafe. Yeah, things are starting to happen.
Yeah, a microdose ceremony, to be specific. But okay, yeah.
But they do higher dose. They got a ceremony room there.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. So I'm curious, looking long to the future, 10, 15, I don't know, 30 years from now, let's say psychedelics are now fully legalized and implemented, and it's implemented well and things are going well. What do you see yourself and Dr. Bronner's focusing on in terms of activism, or maybe what's on your radar right now for the future?
Yeah, I mean, we got to end the drug war and integrate psychedelic medicines, as you say. Medicine is great for healing trauma, but we have to stop inflicting trauma in the first place, and the drug war is such a huge source of trauma
for a lot of
our marginalized communities especially. So yeah, we got to end that in favor of a treatment, not jail approach. You know, generally people who are struggling with addiction or have deep trauma, and subjecting them to arrest and incarceration is not helping them at all, and in fact making it worse. It's like if your uncle's struggling with alcoholism, we get him into treatment, we don't call the cops. You know, it's not going to help him. And so we just got to pivot and just radically rethink how we address drugs in our society and recognize there are many positive benefits, and insofar as people can struggle to offer really effective treatment, like Ibogaine, like maybe have a safe supply store basically for all drugs so people can get whatever they're using, know it's pure, know it's not contaminated with fentanyl, it's not, we're not propping up huge cartels and criminal syndicates, and then co-located with Ibogaine clinics and ayahuasca circles. So like, when you're ready, just don't die in the meantime, but when you're ready to kick it,
right?
We have the resources and as a society, we went through this with alcohol. There's nothing worse than alcohol abuse, as far as the toll it takes on people's lives and families and communities. But we figured out that prohibiting alcohol made everything worse.
I mean, the 1920s, that's where.
Alcoholics still had access to alcohol, but now it had methanol in it, and huge mafia criminal syndicates, are just shooting each other up and corrupting government, it was a disaster of a policy,
right?
And that's similar with the drug war, which is really basically a racist program of racial control, kind of coming out of desegregation. We ended segregation, and it was kind of a new form of racial control that arose, kind of coded on, war on crime, war on drugs, but really was a war on people of color.
Yeah.
And, who are disproportionately locked up and targeted. And, we have like 5% of the world's population and almost 25% of the world's prisoner population.
Yeah.
Now, and the drug war being a major factor.
Yeah. And for people who want to read more about that, Carl Hart's book,
Drug
Use for Grownups. Also a board member of MAPS.
Yeah, right on.
You've got a powerhouse.
Yeah, he's a superhero. Yeah, right on.
I'm curious on more personally, I can only imagine the stress and the effort and the time to work on regulatory change and policy change, and how much of a hit it can be, say, with California when something doesn't go through. For you, have, and if you can't speak to this, then that's fine, But have psychedelics helped you personally with managing the stress and the challenge of getting through all this work and maybe sort of reaffirming your convictions along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, we all need tune-ups.
And, what?
Tune-ups. Like going up for your spiritual tune-up, you know. You know, just like whatever, you know, you get like an accumulated amount of whatever emotional and just, you know, energy that can, you know, you should have. I mean, I try to meditate and get in the ocean and surf and, you know, run with my dog and dance and cook with my partner and make love and, you know, do all the things that are good and healthy for our body, mind, soul. And smoke cannabis every day, you know, thank God for cannabis, and it just really helps. I made a joke, like sometimes I'll be in an argument and you know, like with Mia or whoever, and I'll go out with my pipe and I'm like, man, I'm right. I'm not wrong. I'm right. You know, I don't want to be wrong. But as soon as I like smoke it, I was like, you know, dude, you know, go apologize. You're like, you know, just get that, disinvest from your ego. Just get a more perspective and empathy. And then the bigger medicines. Yeah. I try to. I'm not part of any, like, well, I guess we're all part of the all one family, and there's just a lot of random ceremonies kind of all the time, that I love to plug into, and yeah, they're just so helpful to go deep, you know, and just check in and get that spiritual check in. And it's not always easy.
Yeah.
But really important to keep us on path, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Awesome. Another personal question. I'm really curious about this. How do you incorporate beauty into your life?
Well, I guess my wife, Mia, primarily, she's amazing and very beautiful person, but also creates beauty nonstop around her all the time. It's like incredible. Just like the five random things on the table would be ceremonially activated, you know, within 2 minutes. I mean, I guess I kind of just named some things, but, you know, just dancing, music, friends, homies.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. You know,
dancing is great. I love dancing.
Remembering surfing. Burning Man adventures.
Yeah.
Reminiscing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we brought all our Burning Man art here and just, yeah, it's super fun. Yeah. You know, just try to. Yeah, I mean, actually, that was a big lesson coming through this year or past year. Was I was kind of letting the relentlessness get to me a little bit and got out of balance, and, you know, just really needing to create more space for beauty and, you know, relaxing and hanging out and being with Mia and being in nature and all that. You know, just making sure I'm making that space happen.
Awesome. Okay, so is there anything else that you'd like to say to our audience who may be, which may include totally psychedelic, naive people who have heard of magic mushrooms and think that it's some weird thing that weird people do and haven't heard about, or maybe heard about, saw a news article title about psychedelic therapy or whatever. Anything you want to share with them or any last thoughts?
Yeah, I would, which am I looking at?
This one.
Yeah, I would say mushrooms are great and highly recommend, maybe reading a book. Let's see, what's a good, Consciousness Medicine is a great one, to orientate and just work with a person who's experienced with the medicine and can help orientate you and prepare you and hold space for your session and help you integrate after. And it's just such powerful medicine. You know, we're all struggling with the dilemmas of life. We don't have formal diagnoses are somewhat irrelevant. We're, you know, all on the spectrum of everything. And these medicines can really help us heal and connect and be our more authentic, liberated, awesome selves.
Yeah, I like to say, you know, if you're not in like constant joy or your baseline isn't very, very appreciative and grateful for life, then there's more work to do.
Yeah, right on. That's why I gotta keep taking medicine myself.
No. 100%. Well, thank you so much, David. This is awesome.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you.